18 months before John and Martha, Jim Pittman was intercepted by police. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome in to the Arrow News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. We've talked in the past couple of weeks about what happened recently to John and Martha King in a leased Cessna, which happened to share an N number with an old Cessna 150 that was stolen back in 2002. That plane was deregistered in 2005. The N number was assigned to a new Cessna 172 in 2009. And John and Martha, 18 months later, had an encounter with law enforcement because that stolen aircraft N number was still on the database. And the federal government flagged it in an IFR flight plan. What then came out was that that was not the first time that it happened to that same airplane. And we're here today to talk to Jim Pittman, who in January of 2009 was working for Cessna and ferrying this very aircraft on its first flight from Wichita to Independence, I believe. Jim, is that what the flight plan was?
It was actually the other way around, Independence to Wichita.
The same thing happened to Jim, and the thing that makes this startling is that in 18 months after that first encounter, nothing was ever done, and we're not sure what could have been done, to take it off the federal law enforcement database. Jim, tell us first of all, why do we fly IFR flight plans on a ferry flight like that?
Sure, Paul, and thank you for having me on today. As far as the ferry flight that I did from Independence to Wichita, that was a VFR flight. I would normally do that as a VFR flight, weather permitting. I do have a lot of experience flying around Southern California, and even on VFR days, there are often times that I would do an IFR flight or a tower en route flight, just because in the busy airspace, especially around the Los Angeles area, in a lot of ways, it's actually simpler to do it IFR, even though it's a VFR day.
Let me ask you about this particular flight then. You say you were VFR. Did you ask for flight following?
I did do flight following.
So is that how your tail number got into the blender here?
That would be my assumption, yes.
Let's talk about what happened at the end of the flight. You landed in Wichita.
As soon as I landed there at Wichita, taxied up to the FBO. About the time I shut the engine down, a police car was already approaching, pulled up in front of the airplane. I believe it was the Wichita Airport Police, and they stepped out of their car as I stepped out of the airplane, and they said that they had a couple questions to ask me, and then proceeded to put me into handcuffs.
Okay, now this has to be a pretty big surprise at this point.
Yes. I was going to Wichita for some company meetings over the next couple of days, and one of my coworkers was there to pick me up at the FBO. I assumed it was a practical joke. And, I figured that, she was just trying to be funny and have her friends who were the police officers come over and give me a hard time. About the time they put the handcuffs on, I was pretty sure that they were serious.
I would think that if it was the Wichita Airport Police, they have at least a running familiarity with aircraft types, or is that assuming too much?
I cannot comment on that, but they were very polite. They were very serious about what they were doing. They asked me a lot of questions about who I was and where I was going and where the airplane came from and those kinds of things. And, of course, it was pretty simple for me to explain that, I just picked it up from the factory. It's a brand-new airplane. You can see that very clearly with the documentation, as well as the fact that I had my Cessna employee ID badge on me. And so basically it was a very cold day in Wichita. I remember that. And even though it was nice and sunshiny, it was windy and cold. So they put me in the back of the car, mostly just to have a warm place to sit while they figured out what was going on. And they were making a lot of calls back and forth on the radio. And, of course, they took all my information, all my ID and everything. And within, I think it was probably about 20 minutes, they basically said, okay, we got it all cleared up. You're free to go. The rest of the story ended up being a good laugh to share with all the Cessna employees. As you indicated, this was the first I had ever heard of this happening. And in my situation, there were no guns drawn. It was very low-key and ended up being pretty much a funny experience, but it did cause us to question, how did this happen? And my big thing was, what if I was a customer? You know, I just picked up my $250,000 airplane and, you know, look at my handcuff marks. And, you know, this is not right from a customer service point of view. And I didn't get much information as far as how it happens or doesn't happen or how you can check that database or anything like that. And we just kind of let it all go. And that was the last I heard of it until the incident with the Kings recently. The thing that's, well, there's a couple things that are confusing and I still would love to get answers to. I flew that very airplane all over the western U.S. As a Cessna employee from January of 2009 up until October of 2009 and never had another problem with that tail number. And a lot of what I did, especially as I mentioned around California, was IFR. This isn't just a simple matter of a database with a number in it. I still don't know which government agency this is or where this number is or why it only pops up as a flag sometimes. And then, of course, there's all the concerns about being, you know, approached at gunpoint and hoping that nobody accidentally gets hurt in those situations.
So you don't even know, in your experience, what federal agency it was that flagged that tail number?
Not sure.
All right, listen, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about a little bit about the end of your story in regard to this incident in this aircraft. In retrospect, thinking back, is there anything that you would tell other pilots? Because we are finding out that this is not an isolated incident. It doesn't happen often, but it has happened to other people. I wanted to get your tips on anyone who finds himself in this situation. My guest is Jim Pittman. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Freedom through innovation. It's what led us to develop Cirrus Flying 2.0, the framework for a bold new take on private aviation. And as a result, the gap between the aircraft we produce and those of our competitors continues to widen. Cirrus knows where the personal aircraft industry is headed. We're already there.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Jim Pittman, who was a Cessna employee back in January of 2009 when he was flying the Cessna 172 of recent John and Martha King fame when he had his own encounter with law enforcement over a tail number that was erroneously left over on an old stolen aircraft database. Jim, let's talk about the way your story ended now. You obviously would want to have saved anybody who flew this plane after you did the problem you encountered. There doesn't seem to be any published way to address N numbers that are on that database erroneously, and in any event, you didn't know which federal law enforcement agency it was that even flagged the N number.
Correct.
I guess we just have to assume this will happen again and put up with it? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, the from where I was sitting with my situation, apparently some government agency called the Wichita police and said, this airplane is going to be there shortly. It is stolen. Go get them. And so from the officer's point of view, they were doing their job and they did it well. And it's, you know, almost immediately they realized there clearly was, you know, some miscommunication and they needed to clear it up and make sure things taken care of. So from my point of view, it appeared that whoever they were communicating with, they basically told me it's all cleared up. And I felt like that was enough for this to be taken care of. And apparently it was for quite a while. After I was done with the meetings in Wichita, my final destination was Phoenix, which is where I'm based. And I forget where my next fuel stop was, but I do remember whether it was, you know, Tucumcari or Albuquerque, wherever I stopped. I was looking as a, you know, turn base to final. Okay, any police cars out here? You know, I hope they got this cleared up. And unfortunately, it wasn't a problem. And then the, you know, of course, as I flew it over the next several months, I never had another problem with that tail number, which is, again, why it's so bizarre that this would pop up again for John and Martha.
Obviously, it occurred to you right off the bat that it could be a customer service issue for Cessna. One would think that the company, you know, if there had been a call 1-800-FIX-THIS that they could have, you know, remedied the situation, they would have taken advantage of it. But again, perhaps they just thought that it was a one-time circumstance and that the police had done it. It seems as though everybody else thought everybody else took care of it.
Yeah. I really don't know how those numbers are tracked or how secret those lists are, but it would seem logical that an aircraft manufacturer should be able to, you know, send a list. Here's all the N numbers we're planning on using this month. Let us know if there's a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be logical.
If this is going to possibly happen to other people, we haven't seen any news that suggests that the feds have in any way addressed this, so it's likely it'll happen to other people. What would you say, looking back on your experience, would be a good sort of mental checklist if you get the wheels down on the runway and the tower tells you to turn off at taxiway nowhere and you see a line of waiting police cars?
Well, as in any situation with law enforcement, my advice would be to be cooperative. And, you know, don't take it personal. Don't get defensive like, hey, I didn't do anything wrong. You guys are all screwed up. You know, the same advice I give people when we're working with our friends from the FAA, you know, be cooperative and answer the questions. And you know there's a miscommunication. You know you didn't steal the airplane. So just take the time to jump through their hoops so that they can realize that. And, you know, in my situation, it was cleared up very quickly. And it sounds like it didn't take long with the King situation as well. So it's just an inconvenience, but obviously they have a job to do, and we need to respect that and you know, realize that they're just going off the information they have, and they're taught to, you know, in a lot of ways, you don't know the profile of a thief or someone who could do, you know, harm with an aircraft, and so they just have to be careful and do their job.
Although it does seem a little odd that someone who would tell the federal government, a federal government agency, when they're going to be flying, their departure, their arrival, and the times would not necessarily match the typical thief profile.
Don't know that I'm qualified to comment on that, but I see your point.
All right. Well, Jim, I'm glad it turned out well for you, and it turned out a little more tense, but well in the end for the Kings. And good luck with your future endeavors, and thanks for sharing some time with our listeners today.
Thank you, Paul.
There is still no indication from federal dot connectors that the ancient, out-of-date database that led to this problem for both Jim Pittman and the Kings has been fixed. Think about this when you fly, even VFR, because you could be next. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.